The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere. It's 5 o'clock here.
Yes, it is.
Means we still have an hour of radio to do, and most of the listeners are getting into their cars and driving home. It's not what the other 5 o'clock somewhere meeting is. That's different when I'm on my boat.
It's a good night to drink, though. You got two important games.
Is it, though? Because there's some people, and I feel like Ted is under this world, like, if there's two important games, I'm not drinking. I'm sitting and I'm focused and I'm watching and I'm...
Legal pads out.
That is me. Yes, it's not, but I'm different. I don't retain information, maybe like some people. So I got to write things down I remember it.
Yeah, no, there's so no shame in that.
It's hard to, it's hard for me to chew gum and walk at the same time. So it's hard for me to drink beers and watch games at the same time.
Well, the problem I have is if I have a couple Miller Lights early, then Andy start to get sleepy, and if the game Red Sox Yankees. Tend to be longer games, even in the new age.
That's the biggest reason I don't drink, because it's a sedative. Yeah. It puts me asleep. My issues in the past with my addiction stuff was always uppers. I never got addicted to any of the sedatives. I wanted to feel up. So alcohol gives me that sleepy feeling, and I don't like it.
Well, those of us that have to do a post-game show tonight can't really afford to go too far up or too far down. We have to maintain just a nice equilibrium. So Woolridge versus Dart. Let's go.
Let's go. It's 5 o'clock. Let's go for the drive.
This is the drive.
Swings and drives one. High and deep.
Top stories, stats, and quotes from around the sports world for your ride home. On WEEI Afternoons.
Dan Ball, that's too good a line to be wasted off there. During that, Dan Ball said, I don't care what you people say, it's too good a night to be wasted. I'm drinking.
Yeah, I'm not letting you guys peer pressure me into not drinking. That's
exactly.
Not how this is going.
Hi, my name's Dan.
Hi, Dan.
Before we get to the Boston Red Sox and this critical night as part of this big series with the Yankees, we do have a football game tonight. It's the third and final. I feel like we're slow to adjust. We still say, like, final, like, surprise, the third one is the final. Where's the fourth one? It's been, like, 5 years now, but that's how we are. It takes a while. I still call them the San Diego Chargers, so just bear with me.
Pretty soon it'll be just two games.
We do feel like we're trending in that direction, and I'm fine with that.
Yeah, please.
Because as Curran said earlier when we talked to him, the joint practices are more valuable than the preseason games, and the more coaches utilize those and maximize those. Whatever, as long as they're ready to start the season and make their cuts.
What I'm trying to remember is, when did we have this amount of time between the last preseason? I mean, they stopped having the fourth preseason game, but they still come in at the same time. So now you have 2 weeks to prepare for week one, as opposed to what was typically 10 days, because most, every team played on the Thursday. So that's it. So they just get a nice little extra week before week one.
And they get usually the players get a little time off in there. The coaches have more time to prepare and game plan and do that, but usually players get some time off in there to rest up, and then it's full speed ahead into the season. We asked Tom Curran about a player, whether he'll be full speed ahead into the season for the Patriots, or might he be elsewhere. There's been a lot of talk about Kyle Duggar, his reps, his role, second team, third team. Will we see him tonight in the third preseason game? Tom Curran was a very interesting answer about Kyle Duggar.
What do you think ultimately happens with Kyle Duggar here in the next week?
I imagine they move on from him because, you have the cap space to take the cap hit now. You can trade him and try and see if someone will take on his, I believe, $9 million salary, or if you can offset that salary a little bit and get somebody to give you a draft pick, and maybe they'll take three and you can take six. But to me, you have to cut bait. It's a four-year, $58 million contract. It's a $15 million cap hit this year if he stays on the team. And if you release him, you're going to take $14 million in dead money, but at least you're going to duck the long-term ramifications. So you have the room to admit your mistake now and take the cap hit and move on. Why is he a mistake? I don't know. I don't think he's a horrible player. He's certainly not a $15 million player. There are a lot of panic buys perpetrated by Elliott Wolf last year when he realized nobody wanted to come here as a free agent, and they had a oodles of guys who were coming up with contracts. So they said, let's just vomit this money out on all these players. And by and large, they were stupid moves.
He makes such an interesting point right there that to save face, it's kind of, you know, you can maybe look at maybe Breslow getting, you know, these Dustin May at the very end of trade deadline as a, like, they're just desperate to get something done because they couldn't get what they really wanted done. And so they make these deals that where the player really benefits. I think Kyle Duggar benefited from the fact that Elliot Wolf, to Tom's point, probably struck out in free agency with guys because they didn't want to come here. So you overpay for your own guy, and it looks like a bad deal.
So, Fitzy, we all agree that Kyle Duggar is overpaid. Do we all agree that come this time next week, he should not be a New England Patriot?
No, we do not. I don't see them as a better team. Do I see them potentially better if he's only maybe a one or two down safety? Sure. Is he great in coverage? Absolutely not. But can he still hit like a freight train? Does he have football instincts? Is he a better than average player? Yeah, I wouldn't just cut him. There's no message you need to send to the team, a la getting rid of Lawyer Molloy two plus decades ago. This is just, hey, he may not be ideal for the scheme. He's overpaid. What are you going to do, Del Pettis over Kyle Duggar? Get out of here with that.
And as Curran points out, you don't really save any money. You can pay him $15 million cap hit to be here or a 14-point-something million-dollar cap hit to leave.
You save cash. You don't save money.
Right.
And that's...
I don't want to hear about that.
You don't think they care about cash? The Patriots, dead last in the last 32 years in spending cash.
I didn't say that it's not a consideration for them. I don't want to hear
We're not going to spend much cash.
That is why he will be gone, because they care about the cash. You have your priorities right.
I want the 53 best football players. That's what I want.
They care about that.
I don't really want to be what. Plus, we also know, forget the cash. That's also definitely their consideration. If you're a fan, you don't want to be hearing about anything financial with a team that's got $59.9 million of cap space or whatever heading into the season and yet doesn't necessarily have a roster that's wowing anybody or blowing up anybody's skirts or whatever you like to say, Ted. But there is some positives right now. We know we're not going to see Drake May and most of the guys that are going to be the starting offensive line, whatever, but there is a little bit of excitement, at least from former players that may have played with Ted Johnson back in the day. Damian Woody went on the Pat McAfee podcast, and he's buying what Mike Vrabel's team is selling.
I've been saying I'm bullish on the Patriots.
Hell yeah.
I'm bullish. Listen, we all know it's been a disaster in New England for the past couple of years. You know, for a variety of reasons, whether it's personnel, coaching, all of the above. But now you got Mike Vrabel in the building. And everyone knows Mike Vrabel is one of the better head coaches that we have in the game. And so I think New England's going to have a damn good defense. Don't be surprised if you see the Patriots in the playoffs this year.
Fitzy, is he working your side of the street there? What was that all about?
He's even more bullish than I am. I thought I had sort of like, I won't say hedged my emotional bets in recent weeks, but I've tempered the enthusiasm to a point where if they finish 8-9, 9-8, I'll be thrilled with the development and track of Mike Vrabel and his coaching staff in their first year. Sounds like Damian Woody flat out expects this team to make the playoffs.
Well, the thing I think is interesting about Damian Woody, and I'm going to assume, and this isn't a shot at him because you can't do it with all 32 teams, I'm going to assume he hasn't been paying close attention day to day.
I think that's a fair point.
And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
It's a bad thing.
Okay,
because all the, you know, Julian Edelman's, the Rob Gronkowski's, all these guys that get interviewed locally here haven't been watching Patriots games, the McCourty's. And so they're not following the team day to day like we are. And so they I don't know. They say things. Go ahead. Do you have that pulled up, Stiz? What I asked you to did you hear what he said about the defense?
Yes.
You don't have to play it. Don't worry. But he just said they're gonna have a hell of a defense. And I'm just like, I'm not sure they're going to have a hell. I think they're going to have an average defense. Like, and to me, that's, I think they're a top 18, top 16 defense. This team is so thin on defense. I like their starters. They're good starters. They're not great, but they have no depth. If anybody gets hurt, linebackers, secondary, D-line, that defense could be in trouble.
And that was my point, is it felt like the Woody analysis is based sort of on the totality of the offseason. Oh, we won free agency. We won the draft. We did this. We did that. And not so much based on, Wait, J.J. McCarthy did what in joint practices? He went 16 of 19 with 5 touchdown passes in a short period of time.
The offensive line gave up how many sacks?
Right, yeah. Drake May dropped back 18 times and was sacked 6 of those times or something. And I don't know whether that's a good or a bad thing. Like, I do think sometimes we get too caught up in the day-to-day details and reacting to one practice or two practices. I also don't think you can just swoop in and ignore 3.5-4 weeks of practices and joint practice. The truth is probably, I guess, somewhere in the middle. They're not going to be as bad as the day-to-day Fitzy, and they're not going to be as good as maybe we had hoped when the offseason roster was put together.
I think Damian Woody's projections for this defense sound like what we were all talking about back in May.
Yeah. Except
that sort of sounds like a hype train, you know, momentum is building for Vrabel type of offseason projection, not a, well, there's a couple issues right there. Like, we have undersized linebackers and there's not a lot of depth. And how healthy is Barmore? And what about Gonzo and Carlton Davis? That's kind of where we're at.
And that's why we, over the course of the last month, have done our record projection updates and gone in the lower direction. Damian Woody hasn't done that yet. Damian Woody might do that in like week two if he sees what's unfolding in the first couple of games of the season. We had some big Red Sox news today, and it's nothing specifically to do with Red Sox Yankees or the battle for the AL East or the wild card. It was a call-up that I think it kind of snuck up on some of us. We were looking at pitching, Peyton Tolley, when's he coming up, and all those moves, and all of a sudden, Just Nixon. The password got called up. We talked to Rob Bradford, and he told us what kind of impact he's going to have. Justinson Garcia has been called up.
Nailed it.
How good is he going to be? What's his role going to be? Why now?
I think that it's really an interesting move. But this guy has really rose pretty quickly over the past this year. I saw him playing a lot in spring training. He struggled in spring training, but he really found himself in Double A, and that's kept on going in Triple A. Obviously represents the best bat they have in the system. I don't think really it's even close, you know. So, you know, he was obviously going to be a key part of any Joe Ryan trade. They held on to him. I didn't think that they would need him right now, but they don't have a lot of outfield depth. And the fact of the matter is you need the punch at potential punch that Willie Abreu is leaving behind because he's going to go on the IL.
So the password, Justinson Garcia, will play apparently tomorrow, reportedly. Apparently Alex Cora has said he's not sure yet where, but it'll be in one of the 3 outfield spots. He's comfortable doing that. Ted Johnson, we have to like this move because we're just known to like prospects. And, a guy is hot in AAA, just call him up. He'll stay hot in the big leagues. What are you expecting from the password?
I have no idea what to expect.
It's a great answer.
Yeah, no clue. I mean, I can't tell you. It's a big difference between going double and triple A to, you know, all of a sudden you're playing against the Yankees in the Bronx in a tight race for the playoffs. So if he can hit like he did at the lower levels, they need it.
Because championship.
Right now you got Sedane in a slump. You got Jaren Duran is in a slump right now. You just got guys that are not hitting the ball. This team is not hitting the ball like it was just even a few couple weeks ago. And so they need help when it comes to the bats. And so if he can hit like he did at the lower levels, that'll be huge. But I to sit there and think I know how his game's going to translate to the big boy club, I have no idea.
It's more that we're just kind of hoping that the momentum that he's built the last several weeks in Worcester and the 25 home runs, 73 RBIs, and .290 average translate up to the big league, because I think we can all agree 4-8 over the last 12 with an offense that has stalled out on the side of the road. They could use a spark. They got one from Roman Anthony at the right time 2 months ago when they got rid of Devers. Maybe it's password time.
Yeah. You know what? Yoshida's just, you know, he hasn't really done anything, unfortunately. He's had his moments. But, and then I look at Alex Bregman. He's played 24 games in the Bronx when he was with the Astros. Not very good, man.
Uh-oh.
Not very good.
I didn't expect that to be coming from you.
Yep. Only 206 batting average, 19 hits, 4 homers, 10 RBIs in his 24 games at Yankee Stadium.
Oh, no.
So that's, you know, that's whatever. That was when he was with the Astros. He's on a new team, and he's playing great this year, so we'll see. But I was just curious to see what his numbers were at the Bronx, and they're not they don't get my skirt blown up. You know what I mean?
Dan Ball.
And this is now the fourth significant prospect on offense that you've called up this year. Obviously, Anthony has been tremendous. But yeah. Campbell, after being the rookie of the month in April, was a bust. He's down in AAA. And Meyer had some flashes, but he was a 220 hitter. They wouldn't hit him against righties, and now he's hurt. So you're kind of 1-for-3 so far in your position players that have been called up. So it's an interesting precedence that's been set before him. Yes, Ted?
You know what's interesting is Rafi Devers. This is the first time they played the Yankees without Rafi Devers.
Yeah.
Rafi Devers against the Yankees, pretty damn good. Really good. Historically,
there's a lot of negativity in what you're bringing to the table.
So
from the Ted,
you know what? Okay, Rafi
owned Garrett Cole
is not here anymore, and you just wonder. He's kind of a, some would say, Yankees killer to not have that bat in the lineup. I just think it's worth mentioning. This is the first time they've played the Yankees without Rafi Devers in the lineup, so this should be interesting.
So we're debating sort of the chances for the Red Sox in this series, four games that could, in a way, kind of decide your season, especially, I keep bringing this up, the Mariners have not been winning. Feels like eventually the Mariners are going to start winning. They were very aggressive at the trade deadline. They upgraded their lineup. They got a good pitching staff. Like, they feel like a team that's due for winning.
They're the best team in the baseball.
Which means they're due for like a 7-game winning streak. Right. They have not been winning. I think they've lost 5 in a row. But they're going to start winning. You need to start winning. That was the subject of the poll at Jumbo Heart at WEEI Afternoons today. How many games do you have faith in the Red Sox winning this weekend in a critical 4-game series with the Yankees? Ted Johnson, would you take 0 or 1, 2, 3, or 4?
I voted for 2 there.
Okay,
which I think most people did.
You voted with the Ted Johnson 52% majority the poll. Think they're going to split the series, which was Brad Foe's answer.
Which feels like a win.
Absolutely.
The way both teams are entering the series.
The hottest team, one of the hottest teams in baseball, hitting 14 home runs in the last 2 days, the Yankees. You stink lately. You're kicking away games. You can't score late in games. Yeah, if you split, I think that's a win. The next most popular vote, though, is 0 or 1. That's 22%. If you only win one game in this series, Fitzy, if you lose this series 3-1.
Or get swept.
That's a really bad sign for the rest of August and September for me.
I don't know how the Red Sox, if they go to a point where they'll be 4-12 in their last 16, a vengeance sweep at the hands of the Yanks and the Bronx in late August, like that's Tailspin City to me. That's why 2-2, you know, the old Chuck Woolery, if we can leave this weekend with a 2-2, thrilled.
And if they get swept, I keep bringing this up, that's going to play into the narrative of another season where you fall off the map, you fade late in the year. We're going to be asking Alex Cora about that. Why do your teams fade late in the season? I don't know if he'll have any answers, so that's a bit of a problem. But we did ask Brad Foe when he was on with us earlier. The last time the Red Sox played the Yankees, they lost the first game, and then they've won 5 straight since. They swept them. Are the Red Sox better off this time around, even if they've scuffled a little lately?
This version of the Red Sox, is it considerably better than the first time they played them when they won 4 out of 5? And if so, will that reflect in the win-loss after this is all said and done?
Yeah, the Red Sox have been better since the last time they faced the Yankees. But if you talk about the hotter team, the better team right now, it's the Yankees. I know that everybody has crapped on them for the last 2 months. But anyone who's been paying attention for the last week and a half, 2 weeks, will understand that this team is getting what they need from those relievers that they acquired, Bednar and Williams and Weaver, which are lockdown relievers. You're getting really good starting pitching. And by the way, you're hitting home runs all over the place, even with a banged up Aaron Judge. You're a really, really good team. So as they come into this series, you have to say that the Yankees probably feel a whole lot better about themselves. But like we said before, that was the case with other series where the Red Sox went in to play the Yankees and they came out of them feeling pretty good.
Football Talk on WEEI, which we had just before the recent baseball talk, is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. There is definitely some uncertainty as to which of these teams is better suited based on they've both been a little streaky through the course of the year. As Brad Foe just sort of mapped out, the Yankees had that stretch where they were toast. They were dead and buried, and now they're getting hot again. They're getting a little bit healthier again. So I think this is a really interesting series. I think, by the way, I believe all the games are on like national TV. They're all over like MLB TV and this and that.
Where's it tonight? Do you know?
Tonight is Dan Ball. Tonight's game is...
So it goes Fox, MLB Network / Prime Video, MLB Network, and then ESPN. So I would guess Saturday would be Ness and everything else is pretty national.
So tonight is Fox?
Tonight is Fox.
Fox Thursday Night Baseball.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, that's a pain in the ass, though, for people that live out of market, those that could be listening at .com or Odyssey and don't live where they can catch the Patriots game on Channel 5. Then you're going between Amazon Prime Video and Fox. Ugh.
Yeah, that's the modern era. I mean, I bitch about it. It's why I still have cable and I still have a cord. 617-779-7937. Let's go to the phone lines. Ryan in New Hampshire wants to chime in on the Red Sox. What's up, Ryan?
Hey, so talking on what you guys were saying first, I think that we're going to take at least three from this series. And then... Also, I want to reflect. I was at the game on Sunday, and one of the things that I took from that was that we 100% we need to have Bregman in the lineup no matter what, whether if he needs to have a day off from the field and be a DH, but just having that one at bat just shows that no matter what, he has one of the hottest bats.
Thanks for the call, Ryan. Yeah, I mean, even you brought up his numbers at Yankee Stadium. I don't think you'd ever advocate for Bregman to not be in
please.
The lineup.
No, please. Are you kidding me? No, he needs to be.
Bro?
You know what? I want to see how he does now that he's a Red Sox at Yankee Stadium. You know, those numbers reflected of him when he was with the Astros.
And now that he's around these young, vibing players that have changed the vibe of this baseball team, right? That might inject a little something. Also, quick note, we're talking about the Red Sox thinking. I don't know what it's reached now, but the Astros haven't scored runs in like a week and a half. The Astros have been in a massive slump. So it's not just the Red Sox, and the Astros have more known commodity type players, like tentpole type players. Oh, so it happens to the best of them, including other teams, veteran players. 617-779-7937. Coming up here on WEEI Afternoons, Ted Johnson has the crown. But I think he's going down. Heart takes over. Quiz with Stiz. That's next. But for the last time, Dan Ball has what's trending.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
WEEI Afternoons, 5:30 on a Thursday. That means it is time for... what we hope is an entertaining part of your week. We certainly enjoy it because Stiz takes over. It is time for Quiz with Stiz.
It's time for the Quiz with Stiz.
That's right, boys. You know the name. You know the game.
Rule number one, no bitching.
Seems fair.
Who's that to?
On WEEI Afternoons.
Oh, you suck. That would have been perfect way to end this.
The walk-off. Oh, I send him home on the wings of defeat.
Now, here's your host, Stiz.
That's right, boys. You know the name, you know the game. Andy's favorite part of the week, Quiz with Stiz. Tonight, Andy will go up against our current champion, Ted, 3 Super Bowl winner Johnson, in a battle to see who is the smartest man alive. And before we get going with tonight's theme, I will pass it off to my behind-the-glass brethren for some ground rules.
All right, thank you, Stiz. In the all-time battle between these two, Ted has a 3-1 all-time advantage over Andy Hart. Ted is 6-1 overall. He's been dominating. Andy looking to get back to 500, 7-8 overall in the quiz with Stiz. Stiz has picked a topic for this week. He'll ask the host a question. If the host gets it wrong, the other host will have a chance to steal. If neither get it, it opens up multiple choice. Best of 10 questions is your winner this week. Don't forget Ted Johnson's etiquette for the quiz with Stiz. No bitching, no complaining, no accusatory comments, no self-victimization, and of course, stop being a... you can fill in the blank there and play the game. Yes, Andy Hart.
Just one quick question.
Sure.
This is not bitching or complaining or anything. Mm-hmm. What other sport and or game show allows a contestant to make the rules?
You know what? We don't have time for that. Back to you, Stiz.
All right. And then we did say Nick, the lifeline for tonight.
That's right.
That's right.
All right.
Our
lifeline
great.
Tonight.
Before I give you tonight's theme, Ted, heads or tails?
I'm going to say heads.
Got it. Heads.
Go.
Here we go. Ted will get
Ted the head.
That's not the first time he said that. He likes that.
I know,
that,
it's funny every nickname. Time.
All right, tonight's theme. Big game tonight. Red Sox, Yankees. Let's talk a little rivalry. Ooh. Red Sox, Yankees rivalry.
Here we go.
Uh-oh.
All right. Ted, first question.
Okay.
What year did the Red Sox and Yankees play their first game?
Oh, well, okay. Oh, man. Baseball is an old game, right? It's like 130 years old.
And it's not boring.
Oh, I'm going to say it's like an early 1907.
No.
I was ready.
He was going to come through the glass.
Yeah, a little bit.
What was baseball back then?
1911.
Andrew, wrong.
Son of a bitch. This guy. Power's going to his head.
Yes, sir.
Is it A, 1901, B, 1916, C, 1921?
Nope. 130 years old. It's got to be 1901, Stiz.
Ted's on the board.
Oh, no! Damn it.
Ted's on the
board. There we go.
Right. Good guesses, though, to get in.
Yeah, it's.
All right, Andy.
Good for you, Bubba.
I don't want us to embarrass ourselves as generally. All of us as a group don't look like idiots.
Don't look like idiots.
All right. Good Andy. Luck with
that. Suck a little.
Andy.
Yes.
Babe Ruth moved primarily from pitcher to outfielder when he went to the Yankees. How many times did Babe Ruth pitch for the Yankees?
What?
Specific number.
11.
Oh, no.
My gosh. Total guess. I have no... twice.
No. Okay. Andy. A, twice. B, five times. C, 12 times.
Too far off.
Five. B.
No.
Oh, you suck.
Teddy. So was it two, five, or 12?
It's got to be 12 then.
No.
Nope. No.
No, that's what Andy said. It was, it was
what
five
the hell are
times.
You I said he five. Said
oh, did you? I thought you said 12.
Oh,
ding,
my
ding, ding. Andy's on the board.
What a debacle.
I love it.
Sorry,
I love
guys.
It.
All right, Ted.
Yes.
How many World Series did Babe Ruth win with the New York Yankees?
Oh, my gosh. How many do they got? They got a lot.
a lot.
I'm going to say he won
some.
Two World Series.
No. Andy.
Try saying the same answer again. You might be right.
Yep.
11.
No. How many World Series did Babe Ruth win with the Yankees? A, Ted, A, 2, B, 3, C, 4.
I said 2, didn't I? So it's not that. I'm going to say 4 World Series Babe Ruth won with the Yankees.
Bam. 4.
Ooh. Are you sure about that?
No,
you want to revisit anything?
Yeah.
Take
Sometimes
a second.
I get screwed off when you guys guess the right answer. And you guess the wrong answer, and it's one of the answers that I have listed as
throws
a wrong one. It like
totally
throws me
understand.
Off a little bit.
Yeah, just land
all
the
right.
Plane.
Here we go.
You can get the right answer. I'm like,
keep it moving. Andrew, how many World Series have the Yankees won?
26.
Ted.
You know what? It feels a little bit smidge higher. I feel like 27 is the number.
I will say I wrote this and asked Brian and Dan, is this too easy? They got it right off the rip.
Yeah.
They were
losers.
Like, this one's too easy.
That's kind of a no.
Actually, right now, Andy, you're the loser, so I keep your mouth shut.
All right. Back to Ted. When did the Red Sox play in their first World Series after trading Babe Ruth? What year did they play their first World Series after they traded Babe Ruth?
I think that's World War II-ish. I'm going to say 1944.
No. Andy.
This is one that's going to embarrass us.
1975.
No. Big Ted.
Yes, sir.
When did the Red Sox play? Was it 1946, 1956, 1976?
Oh, it's got to be 1946, Bubba.
Bam. You were close the first time with the guest, Ted.
Yeah, I was close. You were close.
What do we got for a score?
Who cares?
You know, it's funny. You asked this. It's 4-1 Ted right now. Ooh, going back to Andy, though. Oh, a lot of game left. Wow.
And you got Nick as a lifeline. All right, Andrew.
Are you a fighter? Are you a fighter?
Let's yeah, I'm a
fight.
Fighter.
Let's go fight.
It's not how hard you punch. It's how hard you get up after getting punched.
You're going to be punching.
You're down
up.
4-1.
All right,
I've
Andrew,
always been punching up my whole life.
How many times have the two teams played each other in the AL Championship Series?
Some call it the ALCS.
Or if you're Shime, ALCS. Let's go to Fitzy. Let's work Fitzy
ooh,
in.
Ooh, Nicholas.
And I can blame him. I either get a point or I blame him.
That sounds about right.
How many times have the two teams played in the ALCS?
I'll go with... I'll take 6.
No.
I liked that, though.
Ted.
I'll tell you what. I'm going to take... half of what Fitzy said and say 3. 3 times.
Oh, man.
Wait, are you serious? It's only 1999, 2003, and 2004. That's
right. 3 times. Wow.
1999 times. Was the first time they ever met in the ALCS. Get out of here.
Sucks to suck, Andy.
Wow.
That's right. All right, back to Ted.
So I took 3 and doubled it. What a dummy.
Yep. Ted.
Oh, well.
Yes, sir.
What year? Sorry, Hart. What year was there an extra tiebreaker game played between the two teams to decide the AL East?
To decide the AL East? 1972, the year I was born.
No.
I had you, Ted.
Andrew.
1978.
Nailed it, right. Confident.
Isn't that Bucky
the Bucky Dent game?
Confident. All right, good job.
Too little, too late. You ever hear that?
All right, back to you, Andrew. What was the final score of Game 7 of the 2003 AL Championship Series? Think back. Little Andy.
Should ask me for this one, Hart.
Yeah, I thought you'd get the other one, too. But you let me down. You disappointed me. Final score, Game 7, 2003?
2003, that's right.
4-3.
No.
I'd like to use my lifeline.
Ted the Head going with the lifeline.
Yankees 6, Red Sox 5.
Got him.
Yeah!
Got him.
There we go.
Got him.
Now that is how you use a lifeline.
That is. That is how you use
ball.
A lifetime.
When he's
lifeline.
Go drink.
All right, coming back to Ted. Who hit the series-winning walk-off home run in said Game 7 of the 2003 AL Championship game?
Wasn't that the Boone Meister, wasn't it?
The Boone Meister!
Yeah, yeah,
Aaron Boone.
Big
Aaron
watch wearing Boone guy.
First time anyone has ever called him the Boone Meister.
I actually think that's wrong.
All right, and lastly, Andy, send us home.
Yeah, I'm like the Orioles. Let's just make it respectable. Bad season, but I can end strong. Let's go.
Andy,
yeah.
Who did Ted Williams lose the AL MVP race to in 1941?
Why are you laughing?
Because Dan makes me laugh.
Joe DiMaggio.
Nailed it.
Where'd he go,
Bubba? Nailed it. Good job, Andy.
So what was 7-3 or something?
7-3. Congratulations to Ted Johnson. 7-1 in quizzes so far.
Good Lord, what is going on here? But that's going to do it with quiz.
I couldn't believe only 3 times, like Nick. I was surprised when I saw that, too, that it was only 3 times.
We also we had a discrepancy, Stiz.
Oh, no, here we go.
Somebody is fighting with you something on the text line about the Yankees didn't actually exist in 1901, 1903, Highlanders or something.
They may have had different names, technically. I'll look into it, but it was the same teams.
But it was Yankees. That was so. It's actually 6-3. He did not get that. It's a little more respectable.
Actually, Andy, I think it should be double points for you on that one.
All right. nice job, Stiz, except for that one where you kind of lost your Alex Trebek
mind. I was about to say, nice job, Ted.
No, Ted, great job. But Stiz is the host of this. This is his show. He does a great job, comes up with the categories, and he's very creative with those. Some of the questions are very good, so nice
job,
Stiz.
He's not going to let you win. Stop complimenting
him. I'm just being nice. Up next on WEI Afternoons, it's time for...
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Odds and ends. That was Trenny Kuznarek Casey. Is it hyphenated now? Just Casey. I was actually discussing this with her down at Patriots training camp that I've struggled. She's been married for quite a period of time now, but Trenny Casey. Early edition, and talking about the WNBA, the Sun, and that whole...
just don't really know how to run a league.
That's how it feels, Trenny. Odds and Ends is brought to you by Cars for Kids, your trusted charity for car donations. Also accepts donations of boats, RVs, motorcycles, and real estate. Call today, 877-CARS-4KIDS. That's Cars with a K. This is, I think, a really interesting story. Ted, it's a little bit like your NFLPA story. There's sometimes really interesting stories that you know most of the audience doesn't really care about, so we don't get to spend a lot of time talking about them. But Steve Pagliuca wants to spend over $300 million on the Sun. He wants to move them to Boston, which, in theory, I'm like, wait, you're going to spend a ridiculous amount of money, so you're raising the values throughout the league. Because that's how those things work. The new comp is like, well, he paid $300 million for the Sun, so the next franchise, when they're sold, that whole thing. You're in Boston, where they've sold out the Garden each of the last two times they've played in Boston, the Sun, who are currently located at the Mohegan Sun Casino in Connecticut. So there's an interest in Boston, seemingly. And there's two issues at play here. I don't know what the WNBA is doing. Apparently, if you read these stories... they're mad because Boston never put together an official proposal to be an expansion franchise, so they feel like these other nine cities should come before the Boston gets a team. You can't, like, circumvent the system, just buy a franchise and move it there. And I'm like, why not? It happens all the time in sports. Yep. You're new to sports around here. Yep. And then the other thing is Pags. So he clearly feels like he got screwed a little bit on the Celtics, and now they're screwing him on the Sun, too. Like, you won't even let him buy the really, really cool thing, the Celtics. And now you're going to screw him out of the fallback cool thing? Like, what the hell is going on here, Fitzy, with the WNBA, the Sun, and, like, screwing Pags?
I don't understand why they want to keep them in Connecticut. I mean, the only time they sell out the arena is when Caitlin Clark comes to town. I feel like they would do much better if they were in a more significant market like Boston. And Pags has shown a major zeal for wanting to own a basketball team of any kind. Makes too much sense to me, but... it does seem like the WNBA is allergic to success, even when it presents itself so obviously in their face.
And, yes, Dan Ball.
The one thing I would throw in, I wonder, just based on some of the connections between other franchises, if they'd be more interested in connecting with Bill Chisholm, so you have the NBA, WNBA direct relationship versus a separate owner. But still, I mean, over $300 million is not something you turn down.
But he's tapped, though. Didn't he spend all of his money already on the Celtics?
I don't know. I'm sure that he's got some pocket change somewhere, right, something in between the cushions he could spare.
If you can come up with 6 point whatever billion, you could probably find, I would never say this, but $300 million, right? That's pocket change in the realm of that big deal. I did see there was a little bit of a discussion in terms of, because the Garden is Celtics and Bruins, there would be times where the Sun would actually have to play at the Amp in Providence, and they don't want those things happen. I don't know. Figure it out. There's other arenas. There's smaller arenas.
And they become a big regional team.
Right. Like, the Celtics used to do that in the preseason, if you remember. They would, like, barnstorm around New England to try to draw interest, to keep all the interest of all the New England states. Anyway, it's weird, and Pags is getting porked. But Christian Arcan joins us now, host of the Christian Arcan Show, but he does not have a full show tonight.
No,
how'd it go last night?
Very well. Very well, thank you. Yeah, I had a lot of fun. A
lot of dongs?
A lot of dongs. Not as many. There was 14 games. There was only like 17 dongs, but that was 2 days ago. So
I thought they had five last night, too, though.
They had some, but by the time we got the dong report on the air, they hadn't hit them all yet.
Oh, okay.
It was only like a couple from Grisham. And by the way, I'm terrified of what's going to happen tonight. I am mortified about this series.
What?
I am just very, very worried about it. I know that they've been owning the Yankees all season long, but they'd also been killing it at Fenway all season long, too. And they just seem to be, you know, like that loss, I know we said it for the last 48 hours here, but that felt like one of those end of the August losses with Alex Cora, where you're just like, well, here it is. Okay. Like, are we going to have a season here or not? Is this going to be a pennant race or not? In the last 3 years, the answer's been no. So I'm just, I don't know, maybe it's PTSD from the last couple of years or something, but I'm very worried about this series.
So there's also my theory that baseball does weird things, and when a team like the Yankees hits 14 home runs in 2 days, and I don't really care where it is, minor league park, major league park, whatever, that maybe you can sneak out one of those weird, oh, they should have saved some of those for the first game of the Red Sox series. Red Sox 6, Yankees nothing kind of night. And the password's here. When you have the password, you can solve anything, right?
Sure.
Right?
Right.
You're not excited about the password?
No.
Why?
Well, I mean, listen, I hope he has a great debut. I do. I'm not saying I think he's going to suck or anything, but am I really excited about this kid making his debut at Yankee Stadium in the middle of a really important stretch for the Red Sox? I don't know. Okay. Seems like putting a lot of pressure on a very young player is what that seems like to me.
Okay, well, stick around for Christian Arcand. He will lead you into the MassMutual pregame show. You'll get all kinds of optimism I can see about Red Sox-Yankees 4 games.
I'm anxious, Andy.
Yeah, anxiety.
Very,
we played
very
that early
because
that was Fitzy's. That was Fitzy's feeling. Anxiety. Well, 4 games to decide the season. By Monday, we'll know what the hell's going on with the Red Sox, good or bad. So stick around, Christian Arcand. Red Sox baseball. That's up next tonight, and we'll be back tomorrow, 2 to 6, for a fun Friday reacting to Red Sox Yankees and the Patriots preseason finale. Talk to you then.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.